You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Governor Brad Little, on January 31st, deployed the Idaho National Guard for the third time during this pandemic. Now, currently, the Guard is supporting primary health medical clinic locations here in the Treasure Valley, as well as the Idaho Department of Correction. Our Troy Oppie has been reporting on this, but specifically what Guard members have experienced during their work in the community. So Troy is joining us live now. Hi, Troy.
Hi, Gemma. Good afternoon.
Troy, can we start with the logistics? The governor commands the State Guard, but there is a more formal process that actually has to play out behind the scenes before a force is mobilized, correct?
Right. It's a multi-step process. And in the case of local medical care providers, they're going to be working with state health and welfare to make what's called an RFA, a request for assistance. There's a lot of alphabet soup, even for me in this. But they make this request to the Idaho Office of Emergency Management. And then IOEM does its work determining what the need for assistance is and generally vetting out that situation. So they're asking, has this requesting organization done everything it can before reaching the point of having to make this request? And does it need equipment? Does it need personnel, square footage, and for how long? Once those questions are answered, there's a plan put in place. And then if the governor has declared a state of emergency, which remember, that doesn't need to be statewide. They can do things more specific to a geographic area if they need to. The Office of Emergency Management can step in and provide resources. The unique thing with the pandemic, of course, is that it's not sandbags along a river, right? It's not isolated, mm-hmm. and it's generally different than a lot of the situations the Office of Emergency Management deals with. Here's IOEM Preparedness and Protection Branch Chief Ben Rober. He told me there was a lot of learning in real time, especially during their first deployment in 2020.
Typically, in that natural disaster, again, we're able to leverage, either statewide contracts, we can reach out to other states to bring assistance, or we can reach out to other regions and move resources to that area. What was extremely challenging and continues to be extremely challenging is with the pandemic, it's not just Idaho that's facing this problem at the same time that the entire world is in different capacities. And so we're all of the states, we're all competing for the same type of resources. If that's medical staffing for the pandemic, we saw it very early on when we were all trying to find the proper PPE that needed to get out to the healthcare facilities. And so when you're now competing amongst all of the states, all at the exact same time, and it 100% is a challenge for us to source. And that is where being able to leverage some of the state capabilities to be able to assist in that response has been extremely helpful.
Rober told me they've learned a lot through the first two deployments about the importance of finding the right fit for Guard members and the help that's needed at these medical facilities. And now, of course, moving into the Department of Corrections as well.
Okay, so let's talk about that part, Troy. The deployment is in state prisons, as you mentioned. So what are the Guard members doing there?
Well, it's similar to some of the tasks members have performed in places like long-term care centers and at some healthcare facilities, too. At corrections facilities, the guards are not interacting with incarcerated individuals as security, but they are helping fill these other basic needs, cafeterias, janitorial work in some cases. Certainly, there are support roles needed at prison medical centers, just like there would be at your neighborhood clinic. Essentially, it's just about providing the support on those lower rungs of the ladder that free up the folks like doctors and nurses to then be able to do what they're trained to do.
So with that said, Troy, several hundred Guard members have been deployed all across the state of Idaho. So what are they talking to you about in terms of, of their experience and what's happening to them?
Yeah, so I spoke with several Guard members, some boots on the ground, as you might call them, and leadership as well, who were part of the last deployment, which they call Agile Response 2. This was last fall during the Delta variant surge when hospitals statewide were under crisis standards of care. The 124th Fighter Wing provided nearly 400 Guard personnel at about 30 locations across the state. Here's Response Commander, Lieutenant Colonel Catherine Romano.
I think, especially coming from a military background, one of the unique things about us is that we are able to integrate easily into either stressful or diverse environments. And a lot of us want to either learn or serve and do what we need to do and be successful. So we're kind of bred for it. And I felt with each of our members and the different teams that they were either put on or a part of, each of them took the time to kind of figure out where they would be most either helpful, resourceful, and just kind of meet the intent of the mission.
It's a little like finding the right puzzle piece for these situations, right? Guard members would arrive, they'd spend time getting trained up by available staff, and then in turn, they'd be able to train up the next guard support group. Here's Staff Sergeant Jace Ellis of Boise, who spent time at primary health clinics in the Treasure Valley. I asked him about integrating into a medical operation as quickly and as smoothly as possible.
We had soldiers working primarily with nurses who were doing, as I said, testing and delivering vaccines. And, you know, you might have a situation where a guardsman wants to help and wants to, you know, take anything off their plate. So on the guardsman end, you have to be able to make the ask. And on the medical side, you know, it's okay to tell a soldier to move their feet, you know, and then show them how they could be of better service.
So Troy, as with anything, communication is critical, right? Really the key to this. So what has been learned along the way that might make this third deployment a bit easier?
Well, it is communication and expectations, setting expectations. And now you have the new scene with guard members at Department of Corrections facilities. If you find a good personnel fit for a task, you hang on to it, right? And about 75% or so of this all-volunteer force in Agile Response 2 from last fall has volunteered again for the current response. That's institutional memory. It's a huge help. And then you have leadership, which does change from each response mission to the next, but they're relying on after-action reports to inform their decisions. And here's Lieutenant Colonel Romano again on the lessons from the first response that she found most helpful to her command of the second guard response mission.
Most of that revolved around understanding what our roles and responsibilities were specifically for each site. There was potential for different responsibilities or requirements that were given through the Idaho Office of Emergency Management, and they really certify our mission assignments. And it's important to stay within scope of what we are either assigned, tasked, or paid to do, and not kind of dabble into areas either we're not experienced, trained, or responsible or should be doing.
So Troy, I have to tell you, something that really struck me in the story that you put together yesterday was a comment that one guard member made. And this was the fact that when uniform guard members go into a community, they're not always welcome.
Yeah, this happened in a couple places around Idaho where the presence of the guard did not necessarily sit well with some members of the public. And here's Master Sergeant Stefan Asher to talk about that.
It would be hit and miss at different clinics. We would have maybe one or two people a month that would come in, and they wouldn't be very accepting that there were people in uniform giving out vaccinations. Or like when we were up north, there would be at one of our sites, we actually had people come out and protest because we were doing vaccinations at a school. What they didn't understand is the parents all had to sign a sheet of paper allowing their kid to get vaccinated, and we weren't out there forcing the vaccination on anyone.
So it wasn't a widespread problem, but just the presence of uniformed personnel and this idea that they're there to force something upon the public took some education. Lieutenant Colonel Romano confirmed that community discomfort, but both she and Master Sergeant Asher said guard members were able to speak with the community on the ground and let them know what they were doing and why they were there. That really helped to calm those type of interactions, and they weren't widespread, and were managed with that conversation.
Troy, I only have about a minute left, and I'm curious about two things. Do the guard members understand the impact that they're having? I think sometimes it's hard to see that when you're in the midst of an emergency. But also, do we know how long this latest deployment might last?
We don't yet. I think it's safe to say that while, you know, Omicron numbers from the Omicron surge right now are starting to decline, the virus is still in charge. So we don't know how long this is going to last. But this is an all-volunteer force, and there's a strong sense of community with the members I talk to. They're taking their time. They're putting aside their families, their regular responsibilities to do this work. And each told me, to a person, the community service is why they joined the Guard in the first place. So I think they do understand. From a metrics perspective, the first deployment in late 2020, supported more than 180,000 vaccination doses. Guard members were directly responsible for about 48,000 of those. That was over about 8 months. And then during the second deployment, that was last year between September and December, members administrated more than 26,000 vaccinations, more than 27,000 tests, and they were a huge help. Dr. David Peterman, the CEO of Primary Health, told me in mid-January they were essential to serving the public. He raved about their support and how much they were able to help his clinics, and now he has members back again.
Well, Troy, I want to thank you so much for coming and speaking about this. We've been talking with our own Troy Oppie. He is also the host of All Things Considered, talking about his recent reporting on the National Guard deployments in support of local medical facilities. Thanks, Troy.
You're welcome.
More Idaho Matters next.